So here's what I would like to do in this course in general, but in this class in particular, a little differently. As I said in the flyer, I would really like to devote this class to understanding something about Lurianic Kabbalah, right? Now, Lurianic Kabbalah is very, very deep and very, very, very difficult. And I can't pretend to know it very. I mean, now one second, I'm just going to try and connect through one last time to ask my American line because it'll be cheaper and clearer. But for some reason, the phone is not connecting.
It took me a couple of goes with the access code to connect. It wouldn't recognize my keys sometimes when I did the data.
No, it's not correct. One more time. It's not working. Okay, next time. All right, so look, you know, I mean, again, forgive me if any of this is repetitious, if you heard it just last summer, Sarah, or Natalie heard it a year ago, but if it's repetitious, we'll move through all those parts quickly, okay? But please, listen, I don't see you, you know, like I can't see you raise your hand, or I can't see you, you know, look puzzled or something. So we'll learn, and then we'll ask questions, and we'll try and recreate a discussion as best we can over the phone, okay? All right, so look, okay. So when we're talking about Lurianic Kabbalah, yeah, it's a really vast, vast system. I mean, the Arizal came, and in a course of a year and a half, he changed the face of Judaism. Now, it wasn't just the world of Kabbalah that he changed, but afterwards, everything was influenced by him. The way that people keep the halacha is influenced by him. The way the Shulchan Aruch was written is influenced by him. The way Mishnah Brewer, who was a later commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, draws from him. All of Chassidus is based on him. The Ramchal is based on him. Everything comes from the Arizal. Everything. So there's several different ways of learning the Arizal, which is very important, and we'll probably talk about that soon. And maybe I'll give you the introduction now. There are three or four different ways of learning the Arizal, and all of them are important. And there's a big discussion among Kabbalists of which is the proper way, right? So the traditional way, which is from the Sephardim, and the way the Sephardim still learn it today, is that they learn the Ari like you would learn, first of all, what's in Kabbalah? Right? You all study with me, and you all remember a little bit what's in Kabbalah. And you know what's in Kabbalah is discussions of the upper world. It's a discussion of how God connects to the humanity, to this world, right? It's a discussion of the Sefirot, if you remember Richard and Roberta, it was a few years ago for you, but you know, Sefirot,
right?
Those channels, right, which God communicates with through Earth, which he, you know, it's sort of like this. It's sort of like the vessels or the tools is a better word, right? That God uses tools to communicate with this Earth, and those are the Sefirot. So Lurianic Kabbalah is all full of that as well, right? But it's also full of much other things which are not earlier Kabbalah or not as overtly stated in early Kabbalah. It's a huge model of how the world works, how the consciousness works, how things become transformed. I'll explain what that means in a minute. Yeah, but the way the Sephardim had traditionally learned it, which we're not going to learn here, but the way the Sephardim learned it is that they read these books, which are almost written in code. So if we were to learn straight Lurianic Kabbalah, you would all say, "Well, thank you, it's just not for me." I mean, I don't find it interesting. It's all code. It's all worlds and sfirot and partufim, that's another term, and it doesn't make any sense outside of itself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Everyone with us? With me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In other words, there's no reference point outside of itself. It's as if you were learning higher, I'm sure, forgive me if I told you all this before, but it's as if you're learning higher mathematics. Yeah, if you were going to a higher mathematics class, or if you were learning, you know, advanced physics, and you just jumped into the class and you heard them talking, you wouldn't make any sense because there's no reference point outside of itself. It's just you have to already have gone into it and learn the language to understand it well, and that's what Lurianic Kabbalah is like in and of itself. There's almost no external reference point, and therefore the question is among people who study Kabbalah is, well, is there, what do we do with all this vast system that there's no external reference? How do I make sense of it? So the way the Sephardi Kabbalists have dealt with it is that they don't try and find an external reference point. That they just learn it in and of itself. And after a while, you know, they start to learn the ideas, and they start to learn the terms, and they can start to argue this term means this and that term means that, and when this happens, this sphere lights up or this part super lights up. But if you ask them what does it mean, they can't tell you what it means because they don't know what it means. It doesn't mean anything other than what it means, right? I mean, it means something in the upper worlds. Yeah, because Lurianna Kabbalah, you might say, we're going to talk about this soon, you might say it's all about the upper worlds. But they can't tell you what it means in this world. Now, later generations of Kabbalists, particularly the Ramchal and the Hasidic movement, and Rav Ashlag, who was a 20th century Kabbalist, they came and said, it can't just be like that. It can't just be referring to things which don't make any sense in this world. And they retranslated it in terms of, well, each one in different terms. So the Ramchal, who was Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who was a great, he lived around the turn of the 18th century. So he translated the whole Lurianna Kabbalah. We'll see this. We're going to see this inside. He translated the whole of Lurianna Kabbalah in terms of God's relationship to the creation or the soul's relationship to the body. And therefore, when he talks about Sfirot, he's going to be translating it, in historical terms. He'll be translating in those terms. The Hasidic movement came, and they also changed the orientation. And they said that when he's talking about a human being in this world, how a man serves God, or actually man or woman serves God, how thought processes work, right? How people communicate, right? How God communicates to man, and how man serves God through the mitzvahs. The Rav Ashlag came, and he also he gave an interpretation, also close to the Ramchal, that talks a lot about man in this world and between man and God. Right. So there's a big debate among Kabbalists about which is the right way. Right. Is it, and the Sfarim will say, ours is the pure way, because we're dealing just with the upper worlds. And the Chassidim will say, no, ours is the right way, because we're dealing with the real intention of the Kabbalah. Do you hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If it gets too complicated, any way along your questions, let's, put your hand up as if it were.
Oh, yeah, get that. The first translator example.
Okay. The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto.
Oh, so that word I can't hear distinctly.
Luzzatto is his last name. Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. Luzzatto was his family name. Luzzatto. Right? So
okay.
He said all of these images, all these metaphors in the Lurianna Kabbalah, they're all of them are, are metaphors for the way the soul and the body relate to each other, or the way God relates to the creation.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
So if you're talking about, let's say, we're going to see more of this as we go on, but if you're talking about let's give an example, okay? There's a certain prayer the Kabbalists say before they pray. I mean, many people say it before they pray. Perhaps, I don't think we discussed this in class. These are not on the sheets I sent you. I just mailed out a few sheets to you through email, so this is actually not on the sheets, but it doesn't matter. The prayer goes like this. Listen carefully. It says, Yishem Yuchud Kuchu Brichu Ushkinte. Now I'm going to translate that. For the sake of the union of the Holy One and the Shechina. And the Shechina is God's presence on earth. Right? So what the Kabbalist means when he says that is a big question. According to the Sephardi Kabbalists, he's talking about Sfirot in the upper world. We're everybody together on this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Natalie?
Yeah.
You with us?
Yeah.
Someone just joined the list?
Yeah, this is Leon.
Who just came on?
Hello, this is Leon.
Oh, Leon, so unexpected. Uh-huh. Very nice that you're here.
Yeah, I would like to hear and then see and decide if I would like to continue with this.
Fine, okay, fine. Great. Leon is one of my students from last summer, okay? Sarah from Australia is also on the line, Leon, okay?
Hi, Leon.
Sounds good.
Okay, good. So, Leon, we're just talking now. All of this is just sort of by way of introduction, okay?
Okay.
By way of introduction, I'm trying to explain that there's different ways of learning the Kabbalah. And again, I apologize if I'm repeating something you may have heard in class, but I don't remember everything we spoke about in class, especially since I have students online from 3 years ago. So we'll do a quick introduction, okay?
Sure.
So in any case, what I'm saying is like this. What the Arizal did is he set forth a system which is very, very, very abstract. And since that moment that it became public, as it were, since it spread out through Europe and the Middle East, there's been a lot of attempts to try and understand what did he mean with this system. And there's also saying that when he said, for instance, you take a certain phrase, for instance, for the sake of the union of the Holy One and the Shekhinah. So what do you mean? What does he mean when he says that? What is a Kabbalist supposed to think, or any Jew supposed to think when they say those words? And those words are supposed to say before prayers, before doing mitzvot. So I said the Sephardi Kabbalists, if you ask them what it means, they'll say, well, there's something called the Shekhinah, which is the sphere of Malchut. There's something called the Holy One, which is the sphere of Tiferet. And I'm doing this mitzvah or saying this prayer, and the two are going to come together to form a union. Where? In the upper world. When? In the upper world. For what reason? For the good of the upper world. Everything is up above. And the words are just relating to something which is above or abstract. Okay, it doesn't directly deal with this world. In fact, I just read today that if you were to ask a Sephardi Kabbalist, well, what does it mean for this world? He would say, I don't care, because if you learn it in terms of what it means for this world, that's not learning real Kabbalah. Real Kabbalah is only in terms of the upper world. Right? So that's what the Sephardi Kabbalist would say. You with me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Anyone there?
Yes.
Questions?
Yes.
Any questions? Should I go on?
Yeah, I'm good.
Everybody's good? Okay, good. Fine. Next. If you were to ask the Ramchal, what would it mean for the sake of the union of God and the Sefirot, for the sake of the union of the Holy One and the Shekhinah, he would say like this. The Holy One is... Don't forget, in Hebrew, what does holy mean? Anybody know the word Kedusha? What's the meaning of the word Kedusha in Hebrew?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. No.
Kedusha.
Holy.
Justice?
Holy. Kedusha means holy.
Holy.
Right? Holiness is Kedusha. Do you know what the root of the word means?
No.
No?
No.
No Hebrew scholars?
All right. No.
Kedusha, the root of Kedusha means... The root of the word Kedusha means separation, to be separate.
Yeah.
Right. So the Ramchal would say, because that which makes sense, right? Because that which is holy, right, is always that which is separate, right? That which is sort of put aside, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or consecrated is a good word, right? That which is put aside, right? So the Ramchal would say, I'm just sort of speculating now, but I'm pretty sure he would say like this. He would say, whether Kabbalists comes to say, for the sake of the union of the Holy One and the Shekhinah. And the Shekhinah means God's presence on earth. What is the word Shekhinah from?
From earth.
What does it mean?
It's feminine. I know that.
Okay. Okay. Any others? What is the word Shekhinah? Leon, you speak Hebrew. What's Shekhinah from?
Pardon me? Shekhinah? What do you mean what Shekhinah is?
What is the root of the word?
What is the root? It's Shin Chaf Nun.
Which is?
Similar to and presence.
It means to dwell. Right?
It means what? What, Eliezer?
To dwell.
Well,
Shekhinah means to dwell. A Shekhinah in Hebrew, a Shekhinah. In Hebrew, a shkunah is a neighborhood, right? In shkunah means a neighborhood. A shachen is a neighbor. The mishkan in the desert was the dwelling place of the divine presence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the word shkunah means the part of God which is dwelling on earth in this here on this planet on earth, right? So to say that I'm doing this mis- now, this would be like according to the Ramchal, let's say, yeah? He would say like this. He would say, there's a force in creation which is God's indwelling presence in creation. And that gives life to the creation. There's a force which is called the Holy One, which is above the creation. And when I do a mitzvah, I'm going to be connecting that force which is above the creation to that force which is imminent in creation. And by uniting the two, I'm going to be drawing life force from one to the other, and I'm going to be sustaining the creation that way. Should I say it again?
Should we say it again? Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes.
I'm not hearing everybody. Should I say it one more time?
Yes, please do.
Okay, one more time. I'll just say it one more time, okay? Do you hear me? Is this a decent connection?
It's okay.
I'm hearing echoing.
Say again?
I keep hearing echoing.
You hear echoing. There's a way of getting out of that. I don't know how to do it. There's some way of getting out of the echo, but you have to look on a website. I'm not so sure how that works.
I hear Leon really clear and loud, but you are muffled.
I'm going to try logging on again. For some reason, it's not. Let's see if I can do it one more time. See if I can log myself on one more time. Because if I log myself on... I'll see if I can come out again. I can't. This is crazy. The system's not working so well. It's not working so well. I don't know if it's going to work in the future. We'll have to maybe find a different system. You know? Anyway, so let me go again. All right, let me try one more time. When, according to Kabbalah, yeah. Oh, let me try one more time putting it in. Sorry, patience. It's crazy, Tom. The system's not working so well. Okay, so let me do the best I can now. By next week, if you want, we'll find, maybe you have to find a different way of doing it. Okay, in any case, let me go through this one more time, okay? Let me explain it clearly. Okay, according to, now, there's so, first of all, I have to tell you, there's so much to talk about. And every little point that, like, even I feel like explaining this, I feel like there's so much more to say, right? But I'll just keep it simple at this point, so we make sure we understand it. Yeah. According to, let's say, this perspective, we're saying that there's an aspect of God which is infinitely greater than creation. Obviously, God is greater than creation.
Mm-hmm.
And that aspect of God we will call the Holy One, because it transcends creation. Yes? But we're going to say that there is an aspect of God which is immanent within creation. Because the creation needs something has to be here to keep it alive. There has to be some life force, like a soul in the body, right? To keep the creation existing. We'll call that the Shekhinah. That which dwells within creation. Okay? Now, those two things are not separate. According to Kabbalah, in fact, you might say it's almost like a husband and wife. There is a unity, and there is like a masculine and feminine energy. The Holy One is masculine. The Shekhinah, as Roberta pointed out, is feminine. And there has to be a continual union between them in order for creation to exist.
Okay.
If that union was broken, creation would lose its life force. Right? So in that sense, when the Kabbalah, according to the Rashi, and now all I'm just sort of throwing this on the Ramchal, I didn't see this besides the Ramchal. Ramchal is an acronym for Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. That was his name. Okay, we call him the Ramchal, which is short for his name. So what Rabbi Luzzatto said, what I'm saying, I'm just giving this an example, I don't know if he actually said this, but it's an example, is that to say I'm doing a mitzvah to unite the Holy One, which is above creation, and the Shechina, which is within creation, means mm-hmm. that through the act of mitzvah, through the act of commandment, I am now drawing down light from that which transcends creation into creation itself, and therefore enlivening creation.
Okay.
Got it?
Mm-hmm.
We're there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Is this new to people? Is this really new, or is this really old stuff?
Old.
No. No.
It's old stuff?
It's a little new for me.
I'm sorry?
It's a little new for me.
Who's that, Natalie?
Leia.
No. I don't know who it was.
What? I can't hear
anybody. It's Leia.
Which is Leia from where?
From Atlanta.
Oh, there. Hi, Leia.
Hi.
I didn't know you were on the line. So this is new for you?
I mean, I've heard some of it, but not necessarily in this particular way, so.
Okay, fine. All right, we'll do our best to, you know, listen, this is just introduction, so in the beginning, you may be a little bit new and old together, okay? Hopefully we'll move to something that's new for everybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go a little further, okay? So the point I'm trying to make is he would interpret, he has these terms. All you see, if you read in the Ari, if you look in the Lurian Kabbalah, all you're going to see is terms like Shechina and the Holy One, or Malchut mm-hmm. and Tferet, which are the names of Sefirot. He doesn't tell you what it means. And therefore, when you do a union, when a Kabbalist of the traditional Sephardic school says, I'm now doing this mitzvah for the sake of a union, he only means he will tell you, it doesn't have to mean anything to me. I'm doing it because in the upper worlds, there are these concepts, there are these forces, and I'm doing this mitzvah to unite these forces in the upper worlds. If you say, what does it mean to you? His answer is, it doesn't have to mean anything to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As one of my teachers used to say, Rabbi Din, who first told me Torah, he used to say, this is a bit profound, I don't want to spend too much time on this, he used to say, it doesn't mean anything to you, because he would ask, what do you mean to it? In other words, the question is, a Kabbalist of that school of thought would say, this is the ultimate reality. I'm dealing with the ultimate reality. I don't need to translate it into your terms. You have to come to understand it in its terms. And there's something very profound in that. But that wasn't enough for a later Kabbalist. Okay? So when the Moshe Chaim Lutzatzel came, he came and said, no, I'm going to translate this in terms of the creation's relationship to God. Therefore, when I talk about the Holy One, I mean that force of God that transcends the creation. When I talk about the Shechina, I talk about that force of God which is immanent creation, which gives creation mm-hmm. life. And when I talk about their union, I'm talking about somehow that thread of life that moves from the transcendent into the immanent and keeps it alive, like an umbilical cord, okay? Or like the union of husband and wife. Wow. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, who's that, Roberta?
Right, Roberta Las Vegas. This, the metaphor of the upper world with that directionality, I just find so fascinating, or if not problematic, but interesting, certainly. Upper versus lower, that the direction.
Right. That's a very interesting comment. The truth is, what I would really want to talk about today was breaking that whole
geography?
That whole pattern. Yeah. I really want to talk about something which is so deep, and I know we'll start talking about it perhaps in a few minutes. So I just need to sort of figure out our introductory stuff. But I really want to talk about something which I feel is so deep that it's so deep that it's going to break that whole geography, right?
Hmm.
And really make us because my question, the question I really want to deal with today, yeah, and this is the sheets which I prepared, and we'll see how much time we have for it, because this conference call ends in about half an hour or so, 40 minutes. So the question I really wanted today was, why study Kabbalah? Okay. In other words, not just what is the study of Kabbalah, but why study Kabbalah? And to me, the reason to study Kabbalah has to do with a certain, how can I say it? like it really has to do with the transformation of the consciousness. And the transformation of consciousness can only happen when there's, you might say, a restructuring of the way we think. Right? And if we can restructure the way we think and act, then our consciousness becomes restructured and we become something else entirely. But it's really deep. And I don't know how far we're going to get, and I don't know, and I have to think whether this is the best format, because I hope you can all hear me clearly. All right? I mean, it's easier for me to talk on the phone than to do through Skype, but, you know, through face-to-face conferencing calls. But I hope that this is the right avenue, that the phone service has to be working clearly, obviously, to do this. Okay? All right. But let me go a little further with the, before we get on to the next part. Okay? If you went to the third school of thought, which is the Hasidic school of thought, and you said to them, what does it mean, the union of the Holy One and the Shekhinah? So they might, among many things, they might say like this. The Holy One is your thoughts. The Shekhinah are your words. When you unite your words and your thoughts, which means when you think about what you're saying, especially when you pray, when you think about what you're saying, so you're causing a union. And in that union, you're bringing somehow God's revelation to the world. Or they would say, the Holy One's your thoughts and the Shekhinah is your actions. And when you think about what you're doing, which is kind of like a Hasidic mindfulness, when you think about what you're doing, so your thoughts are invested in your actions, and they go into your actions, and therefore you're creating a union between that which is above and that which is below, again, that vertical sort of dimension, right? And that creates a union, and every union, there's a sort of, that brings a unification to the creation. So you see the Hasidic movement interpreted very, and I mean, that's only one of many interpretations of the Hasidic movement, but that one, you see that the Hasidic movement interpreted very much in terms of inner work. Right? Almost psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, the next school of thought would be the Ashlag, and I don't know yet how he would interpret that. I have to go and do some research onto that. But he would give it another interpretation. Right? So what you see here is you see that the Kabbalah is a set of symbols and a set of terms which were given in a very abstract, non-reified, you know, like non, like an abstract non, what's the word? It's not non-physical sort of terms. And then later generation says we have to start interpreting this to understand what that means. Yeah. And then comes a very big discussion among the Gaons, which is there a true interpretation, or is there one right interpretation? All right. So now, what do I want to do now in this class? If it continues, I hope it continues. Right. Is that there's two ways of studying Lurianic Kabbalah. You call it horizontally and vertically. The vertical dimension, that's not stupid, that may be a stupid division. But on the one hand, you could spend your whole life just arguing and discussing the terms without ever asking what they mean. Because it's so complex and there's so many contradictions between them that most of what the Sephardic Kabbalists do, all they do is just discuss the different contradictions, and he means this here, and he means this there, and the kind of subtleties of, but it's all very, very abstract, right? Or that I believe they call the horizontal, vertical, yeah. But horizontal would mean, okay, well, we don't have to go so deep. We don't have to go into every little detail because the details are vast. We don't have to go into every single little detail of every. Let's just set the big picture, the big principles, yeah. What is Adam Kadmon? What is Shvira? What is Tikkun? What is that? Stages of emanation? What is the different worlds? The Kudim, Akudim, Brudim. What do these different worlds mean? And what do they mean now? And then to say, well, what do they mean to all these varieties of different thinkers? Right? One doesn't have to go super deep into every detail, which can be really boring. But one could say, at least on the level, think, okay, I have a concept called Shvira, which is breaking, like the breaking of the vessels. What does that mean in terms of consciousness? What does that mean in terms of my being of the world? What does that mean in terms of relationships? What does that mean in terms of Jewish observance? Yeah? And then you can have a lot of different thinkers. You have a lot of different thinkers until today who are dealing with that and going through those levels of interpretation. Right. So that's more or less what I'd like to do here. And the principal ways I want to look at it are, A, through the traditional Kabbalistic way, the Hasidic way, the way of Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, and the way of Rav Ashlag. Each one has his own school of thought.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to do, more or less, what I'd like to do in this class. All right?
Okay.
Sorry, let me take a break for a second. Any questions?
No.
No.
No?
No.
I've got one. What's the argument then for one particular school of thought? Like, why does, you know, the Sephardic say that their way of thinking is the only way of thinking? And, like, I mean, I don't understand why it just has to be one way of Kabbalah for it to be right.
You're asking why do people want to insist that there's one way of Kabbalah?
Yeah, like, why is there only one right way?
Why? I know, it's a good question, why. Why does he have to say this one way is right? Why do they say that? I don't know. The truth is, I see them all as definitely connected, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to discuss today. But why do other people see them as one's right and one's wrong? Maybe people have different traditions, you know? Maybe like a person has a tradition that goes back to a certain teacher and he feels that that's the right way because he got it from that teacher, you know?
Right.
I was reading a book for this class to in preparation for today, and the author, who's a Sephardi Kabbalist, claimed that the way that the Hasidim and the way that the Moshe Chaim Luzzatto learned Kabbalah was influenced, he says, that because they were European, and the Europeans had to deal with the Haskalah, which was intellectual movement, and therefore they had to look for intellectual reasonings behind Kabbalah, and therefore had to formulate a whole different way of understanding it, but it's not pure Kabbalah. Because pure Kabbalah is just talking about the Sefirot. That's what he said.
Okay.
But, Tova, let me explain something which I don't remember explaining in class, but I find it very interesting. He would say like this. He would, I really need the blackboard to explain this to you. Right? But without the blackboard, you have to just picture in your mind. He would say that there is the soul of Kabbalah, and there is, like you might call it, the garments of Kabbalah. The garments would be, like, mm-hmm. not the soul of the thing, but that which covers it, right? That which sort of hides the soul. Yeah. So he would say like this. He would say the soul of Kabbalah is really just learning the pure language of the Arizal, of the Lurian Kabbalah, without any reference outside of itself, and that's the soul of Kabbalah. And the garments of Kabbalah are sort of like what clothe it, you know, what give it sort of an outer look, right? External appearance. That could be the Hasidic interpretation, or the interpretation of Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, or some other interpretation. Yeah?
Thanks.
But that's not the soul of it. However,
right.
I've heard this from my teachers, right, that they learn it exactly the opposite way. They learn it exactly the opposite. I went to one of my rabbis, who's a big expert in Kabbalah, and I asked him, can I study Kabbalah? And he said to me, yes, but you have to listen to what he said. This is very deep. He said, yes, but you have to study from somebody who knows what it means. Okay? Now, listen, this is very deep. You have to study Kabbalah from some... If he's saying you can study the Kabbalah of Isaac Luria, but you have to study it from somebody who knows what it means, what is he saying about the Kabbalah of the Lurianic school? Is that if I just learn it by itself, without knowing what it means, is that the soul or is that the garment?
Well, some people would say it's the soul and some people would say it's the garment.
Listen again. Listen again, Sarah.
Okay.
Natalie, with us? Natalie.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm with you.
Are you here? Okay, I'm just checking in. I can't see you, so I can't...
I know, sorry, I'm here.
So you can phase out. If you heard it before, then I don't care. I just want to make sure everybody's together. I want to make sure that people hear that they're following you. That's all, okay? Again, listen. Richard, you there? If a person
I'm here.
Says...
I'm here. I'm with you. I'm with you, yeah.
Okay, Leon, the rabbi says like this. You can learn Luriana Kabbalah, which is all about, which is very, very abstract. Yeah, I told you, it's all about spherals and stuff like that. You can learn Luriana Kabbalah, but you have to learn it from somebody who knows what it means. What is he saying about learning it by itself?
That you can't do it.
That is meaningless.
Right. These are the garments which cover the soul.
That would be the garment. You hear? You hear? Listen, folks, you have to hear. It's so amazing. He's saying that if you learn if you were only sitting and learn Lilliana Kabbalah by itself, which is only just describing worlds and describing spheros, and you don't know what it means, it's the garment without the soul. Because meaning is always the essence of a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I tell you a story, which is like some abstract parable, and I don't tell you what it means, so then you've missed the essence. You've only heard the outside. You didn't hear the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So by saying me, you can learn Luria and Kabbalah, but you have to learn as it knows what it means. He's saying that the Kabbalah of Isaac Luria by itself, with all these great technical terms it uses, is only the garment, because it's not the essence. The essence is something else. What is the essence? Well, he's a chassid. The man told me, he would probably tell you the essence is personal transformation. But to the Sephardic Kabbalah, it's exactly the opposite. He would say, no, he says, if you're talking about personal transformation, if you're talking about life in this world, that's not the essence, that's just the garment, that's just the expression. The essence is something very, very abstract, something above and higher worlds. So here you see two people could be talking about the same thing, and both of them could be both defining what they're doing in terms of essence, and yet they could be completely disagree.
Mm.
See? And let me give you an example. If I'm learning higher mathematics, let's go back to higher mathematics again. Let's look abstract physics. I don't know, right? So you can go to the abstract physicist, and you can say to him, what does this all mean? So what do you want it mean? This is the essence of life. This is the essence of reality. We're discussing the fine points of the structure of reality. What do you mean, what does it mean? That's what it is. You want me to tell you what it means and how you plug in your toaster to make it work? I don't care about that. On the other hand, right? If you went to a person who was a applied mathematician or applied physicist, he would say, "Well, what it really is all about is how do I make it work in this world?" And all the abstract stuff is just secondary to getting it out in the world and making human life better. So they're both dealing with the same information, but they're both regarding is very different. Is it that you're learning this in order to understand what's happening above, or am I learning this to understand what's happening here?
So,
right.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have a question, and I'm sorry for everyone else if this is, like, basic.
No, this is good, please.
But I don't necessarily understand how the two are so contradictory, because I find them to be somewhat... It's connected, so I just don't see how the two schools of thought are necessarily mutually exclusive. Meaning that I don't know. I see them as both related and very connected in a way, and so I'm not exactly sure.
You know, I think that you're right, obviously, and you're obviously thinking in it. You're obviously thinking in a connected way, right? But There seems to be a debate among Kabbalists about priorities, right?
I see. Okay.
In other words, the Sephardi Kabbalists spend all their time just trying to figure out how the upper worlds work.
Right.
And the Hasidim put much more. I mean, the classic Hasidim, not today, but classic Hasidim. They put much, much more. You see, they never went. The classic Hasidic scholars. They never went into the Prati, the detailed discussions of Kabbalah. They worked with the main ideas, because they thought the main ideas were enough, because life is all about, because the whole system is all about life in this world, and very subtle arguments about which side and which sphere turns up or down or right or left, they didn't interest them. Right?
I hear.
Because unless they can somehow translate it to real day-to-day practice. So I guess it's a matter of emphasis, you know. Obviously, it's connected. You can't have one with the other. But it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of emphasis, because you can spend all your time learning something and then it doesn't mean anything to you, right? Or you can say no, that you keep learning and then it'll mean something. And then you know, I can tell you one big difference, right? One big difference is life in this world.
Right.
That if I put all the emphasis above, then life in this world is secondary. But life in the higher world is beautiful. If I put all the emphasis below, on like the Chassidim do, then life in this will become very rich. But maybe, you know, I know the Kabbalists would say, but you're missing the main thing, which is above.
Right.
So there's a lot more repercussions. I mean, I can go into a lot of repercussions. It has to do with, I can explain education, I can explain in terms of history and the way the Hasidim relate to the Litvaks and the Sephardim. There's a lot of discussion there, right? It has to, it boils down, in fact, to the very way how human being feels, goes through the world. I've seen people who study Kabbalah, and they start to just, their heads are just like not here, you know? Like everything in their mind is just, everything in their mind is upper world, which I think is a big problem, right?
I was going to say, we are physical beings. We have a physicality, and so it would follow that by the very nature of our own physicality, that we would need to bring it, I guess, out in our physical world and understand it from that perspective, but not that
Go on.
And not that the deeper aspects aren't there. I just, I'm wondering if there is a way to integrate the two. Meaning, it's more of an education style, learning the overall concepts so that you have an idea, and then as you grasp the larger concepts, then slowly dive deeper into them so that you don't like end up like, you know, not in this world at all.
That would be ideal, you know, and anyway, I guess hold on, I'm coming on, hold on. Hello.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Finally. Good. Good.
Wow. Much better.
I have an American DSL line, and I connect through there, but I just wasn't connecting. It just was giving me the conference code number wasn't going in. So finally, I did it on the side. Okay. So now in the future, we'll try and work with this. Okay, I think the Skype is not going to work for me. I'll have to work from this line. Okay, great. So, remind me, Leah, right?
Yeah.
So, Leah, you're right. Obviously, the point is ultimate integration. But one thing we learned, I think my students from the class, we read some writings of a Kabbalist who were really very unintegrated, you know,
mm-hmm.
who were, like, not in this world at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're always, that thread is always there, you know. So I personally think that the Hasidic way of doing things, but is generally more healthy because it's more grounded.
Yeah, it seems so.
But the other way is very important because in a certain sense you can't have the practice without the theory either.
Right.
So that's basically what we're gonna do in this class. We're gonna look at these things from perspectives. All right. Now, what I would undo today, if we have time, but we don't have time to do everything. Did anybody see? I sent a bunch of sheets to anybody. Did anybody get them? Did anybody look online?
Yeah.
When did you send the sheets through?
Well, I just sent it before the class a little bit. So if you have a computer in front of you, you probably have you'll have them on your email already. Okay.
Okay.
Leon, I didn't send it to you because I wasn't expecting you to sign on. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Okay. So the question is like this. Do we have now like this? We have here like another 15 minutes or 20 minutes. Do you want us to go to start? Should we start on this to see how it goes? Or any other issues or questions before we start? Hello?
Leon, I need a sheet from Elliot.
I need a little bit of feedback. Yeah, should we start with the sheets?
Yeah, I would be.
Okay, great. Okay, fine. Okay, so here's what the sheets are talking about. The sheets are talking about... Let me give you the overview. Yeah, I sent out also what's called a mind map. If those of you who are my students know, I like to make these maps where I get to see everything on one page. Yeah? So I'm going to go quickly through the different topics I want to discuss. If we can just cover everything in one class, well, probably we can't cover it today, but anybody who wants to continue with me, I'm going to do it next week, I hope. As long as I can keep it up, we'll do this. I don't care if just a few people do it. For me, it's also interesting, exciting to prepare the material. So look, basically what I wanted to discuss today is why do we study Kabbalah, right? And I'm gonna run through now. Does anyone have the PDF of the mind map in front of you?
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna go through it fast. Okay, I'm gonna just go through what you call the Rashi Prakim, just the chapter heads, the topic heads, yeah? And then afterwards we'll start breaking it down more, okay?
Okay.
First of all, in order to understand why you want to study Kabbalah, there are several very, very important things you have to know ahead of time, right? A person has to know that, in a certain sense, Kabbalah is, you have to understand that what does Kabbalah understand is the purpose of creation, right? Because if Kabbalah is what we might call the ultimate science, if Kabbalah is the ultimate science of trying to understand the ultimate questions, yes, and that's really what it is. It's about understanding ultimate questions. Why are we in this world? Why are we here? What are we doing? Right? What's the purpose of life? You know, is there a God? How does God relate to man? Why do people suffer? All those type of things, right? Kabbalah, that's what really Kabbalah is about. So if that's the case, yeah, so then we have to understand why did God create the world? That's the first question we have to understand, right? The second way I question this, which is really contingent on that, is what is the purpose of man, or mankind, humankind, as you were, right? Because the purpose of creation, obviously, Kabbalah will whether we like it or not, whether we are humanistic or whether we are ecocentric, whatever. But Kabbalah, Judaism and Kabbalah in particular, does put human beings at the center of creation, and we have to understand that if creation has a purpose, then certainly we have to understand what's the purpose of the creation of man. Now, those alone will give us reasons for studying Kabbalah. And we're going to discuss a little bit what the word Kabbalah means. And then now it becomes a real issue. The real issue for me is to understand the purpose of creation, to understand the purpose of human being. We have to understand what does it mean to be made in the image of God. Right? All this is just a chapter head, right? What does it mean to be made in the image of God? And what does it mean for Kabbalah to be made in the image of God? And what is the significance of that? And how does it mean to have to act? And what happens through that action? Right? Once we get that, we get to I wrote here on the mind map imitatio Dei and Tzelem Elokim. It's really the same sort of. It's really the same thing. It's to imitate God and to be considered imitate God in one's actions. And what does it mean to be created in the image of God? Now, finally, the last point is, and this is the point which is going to take a little bit of building up to, but this is I think the most amazing. And this goes back to what Roberta said and even what Leah said before. And that is that once you see how the whole system fits together, you see that there really is no dichotomy between the different perspectives. And that really, if we understand what it means to be a human being in the Kabbalist way of looking at things, which is really deep, it's going to mean in the end, and I'm going to give away the end, I'm going to give you the ending now, but I'm going to tell you what the conclusion is, where I want to work up to, right? It really means being an extension of God. It means being not just an image of God, but being an extension of God.
Hmm.
And then once you're an extension of God, then everything changes. That's like the roadmap. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Any questions before we go on?
No.
That was helpful. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Richard, are you there? Lane, you're there?
I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. No questions.
Okay. No questions?
No, not yet. No.
Fine. Maybe I need to teach it. Maybe this whole stuff easy. Okay. Let's look now at a few sources. Let's start with a few sources from the writings of the Arizal. Okay? And I'm going to read them and translate them slowly. Okay? Because I didn't have a chance to do a translation before the class, so I'll translate them. And if you have the text in front of you, you can read on. If you haven't got the text, so then just listen well. Okay? This is from the Sefer Eitz Chaim, from the very, very beginning. Eitz Chaim is the classic Kabbalistic work of the Ari. Okay, he says like this: "Be'inyan tachlis kavana shel briat olamot." Now, in the matter of the purpose of the intention of the creation of the worlds, okay, or the reason for the worlds were created. Nevarata beit chakirot shid nisasko behem hamukubalim. We're now going to explain two points that the Kabbalists investigated or thought about. Hachkira Arishona, the first question is, Huma shechokru chamim arishonim v'achronim ledat sibat briat olamot. The first question is, what if early thinkers and later thinkers, or perhaps early Kabbalists, later Kabbalists, investigated to understand the reason for the creation of the world? Le'ezi siba haita v'nimnu, and why did God, what was the reason? And they decided, So it goes through Omer, Ki sibat hadavar haya lefni shnei hu yitbarach muchrach shiye shalom shalem bechol pulosav. Because God had to be complete in all of his actions, v'kochosav, and all of his powers, v'chol shmosav, and all of his names, shmosu shel gedolu, all his great names, umal v'chavod, his great and lofty and honored names. Now, again, he's saying like this, the reason God created the world was because he had to be, the creation was some sort of act of completion for God. So somehow God was incomplete until he created the world, if you could say such a thing, right? Now I'm going to go on. V'im lo haya motzi pulosav v'kochosav lidei poel u'maseh lo haya kivyachol nikra shalem lo b'pulosav v'lo b'shmosav v'kinav. And if he didn't bring out his actions from potential to actual, he would be somehow... He couldn't be called complete in his actions, in his names. Does it, you understand? Questions? Any thoughts on this?
So basically, your idea of being the extension, the completion.
One second, where you're jumping to the end. Let's just hear what he says first. You're jumping to the end, because in nowhere here is it talking about human beings. He's only talking about God creating the world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's simply saying, and I'm saying other words, he's simply saying that God has got all these names, all these powers, all these, and he creates the world in order to bring it out from potential to actual. Because if he didn't, somehow these different attributes would not be complete. What's this like?
But it's like anything. I mean, if stuff is sitting inside, you know, one's head, what good does it do there?
Who's speaking, Leia or Rupert?
Yeah, this
who's
is Leia.
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 In other words, it's right. It's like saying. I remember what my rabbi used to say, Rabbi Din. He used to say that if you go to a party, and there's a guy sitting in the corner, who's wearing very nondescript clothing, and he doesn't talk to anybody, right? And he doesn't go to the bar and get a drink, or he doesn't dance, or whatever they're doing, right? So after a while, he's just going to disappear. You know, like nobody's going to know that he exists.
Mm.
Right? So in a certain sense, he would say that, in a certain sense, like that would be God, before he created the world.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain sense, he's not doing anything to bring out. In other words, everybody says it's very hard to say God lacks, but in a certain sense, there would be some lack because something would not be complete, because completion is only to the degree that you bring it out from potential to actual. Right?
I mean, this is Roberta. So is there a distinction between idea and materiality here?
In Chabad, they say that to God, even the idea is like material because God so transcends everything. Right? But one could say that it is a difference between potential and actual.
Okay.
Right? Well, we say, you know, Reb Nachman says many times in several, Reb Nachman from Breslov, so he says many times in several very important lessons in Lukta Moran, he says that he's talking about a certain mystical state there. He's saying that a mystic goes back, listen to this, this is very interesting. He says that this is so high, I can't even talk about it. He says that there is a place, there is a mystical consciousness that the mystic goes to, a person goes, don't forget, mystic is one who's trying to get some sort of direct connection with God, right? Where he calls it going back to your source. He says, you're going back to your source. And in that source, you're obliterated. There's like nothing there. And he says, it's like going back, it's like as if it were a child going back to the point where they were only in potential in the parents. You hear?
I hear.
Right? In other words,
okay.
There's a famous story from Reb Nachman about the seven beggars. Do people know the story at all?
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
So no. let me tell you what he says in the story, because it's very, very profound. Yeah? And again, And there's a great deal of talk about this. As soon as I tell you that you're going to jump on me, you can jump on me. You can say, one second. It's not worth discussing. It doesn't. It is worth. Mm-hmm. Reb Nachman says like this. Reb Nachman told 13 famous stories, which are like fairy tales, like fantasies, and they're very rich with Kabbalistic imagery, and they're very hard to understand. In one of the stories, he says like this. There was a bunch of old people. The old man in the story is telling the story, like within the story. He's saying, there's a bunch of old men sitting around, and they were trying to compare who had their earliest memory. So the oldest man says, I remember when the fruit was cut from the tree. And they all say, wow, such an early memory. And another man who's a little bit younger says, I remember when the fruit was growing on the tree. And they say, wow, that's an even earlier memory. And another one says, but I remember when the tree was just flowering. And they say, oh, that's an even earlier memory. Another one says, but I remember when the tree was first planted. They say, whew, that's earlier than everything. Right? And the final, the one who's telling the story, who's the hero of the story, he says, and he's the youngest of the old men, but he has the oldest memory. He says, I remember when the seed was in the fruit. They saw this even earlier. And then the youngest says, I remember when there was nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, what is that? It's all a metaphor. What's it a metaphor for? Anybody know?
The creation of the world.
Well, according to Reb Nachman, he's talking about mystical experience. And he's saying like this, that all these old men are like mystics. And one is saying, I remember when the fruit is plucked, he means I remember when I was born. And the one that says, I remember when the fruit was forming, says somehow he remembers when he was in the womb. Mm-hmm. Another one says, I remember when the fruit was planted, which is the moment of inception. Right? And the one with the oldest memory says, I remember when there was nothing, means that's when the seed was still not even formed yet. It was still part of the Father. Right? And Reb Nachman uses this as an example of mystical experience. The person could go to the state where they're before creation, where there's nothing. Right? Now you might say, but that's the opposite of what we're discussing. We're discussing now creation. Now you're telling me to go back from creation. So that's true. That's only one stage. A later stage is, okay, now that the world is created, there's a state prior creation, but God, that wasn't enough for God. God created the world in order that there should be action, that there should be a creation, that something should come out from potential to actual. Right?
Okay,
so we're there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now, here he's only talking about the God's names or God's attributes. So I'm going to go a little further, okay? Wait. That's enough. You know, he goes on and on and on, but that's the main point here. Okay? That's the main point. Now he goes into certain details, but the rest, we don't have to go into all the details. Okay? Hold on. Let me just see. Okay. Well, he says like this. I'm going to skip a line. V'im lo nivro olamot, if the world were not created, v'chol asher b'hem, and is in them, right? Lo yuchal liros amitat horat havayato yisbach hanitzchit mavar v'hovei v'atid. If the world weren't created, we would be able to appreciate God's eternal being. That's what he says. That's the long line. Okay, now that's one reason the world is created. I'm going to go down now to another. This is the second source, okay? This is if I send these sources again by next week, I'm going to try and put translations in and maybe line numbering so we know we're holding in the same place. Okay. This is source number two. In Hebrew, it's Sefer Eitz Chaim Shar Aklalim. Listen. K'sha'ala b'ritzono yitbarach shmo livro et olam k'dei lehetiv lebruav v'yakiru g'dloso v'yizku lihyot mirkava lamala uledabek bo yitbarach. This is another reason. Folks, what we have to do now, listen to what I'm trying to do. Let me explain what I'm trying to do to you. Let me try to explain what we're going to do here. There's no way to say we're going to finish this. No way. But I want to explain to you what I'm trying to do here. just three several different reasons why according to the Aryan writings, there's several different reasons why Krauss created the world. Okay?
I'm sorry, could you please repeat that? I didn't hear the last thing that you said.
No problem. I'm saying that according to the Lurianic writings, there are several different reasons why God created the world. Right?
Okay.
Several different reasons. But what I want you to think about, and if there's no time to talk about it today, I'll send you the sources again in English, and you can think about it at home. I'll even send questions here. Like, I don't mind preparing it like a class, as it were. You know, you can think about it. You have questions to think about, answer. And what we're going to aim for is to see how they're really all saying the same thing, okay, the essence of the thing, even though they sound very different. Here is source number two. Okay, I'm going to translate it, okay? When it rose up in God's will to create the world, in order to bestow upon his creation that they could recognize his greatness and they should merit to be a chariot for above, for the supernal lamala, right? Forever is above, exists above, and to cling to him. Those are four different reasons. In order, again, to do good to them, that they should recognize his greatness, that they should become a chariot for him, meaning I don't know how to explain it.
A
vessel for him, and they should cling to him. That's also in the Arizal's writings. There was a great Kabbalist, I want to tell you, there was a great Kabbalist, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Karmano, with a great, great, great Hasidic Kabbalist. And I read a story that he had a son who didn't learn Kabbalah. And one day he called his son and said to him, how come you're not learning Kabbalah? And he said to him, I'm supposed to learn from a teacher, and you haven't taught me yet. So his father said, open this book, and he told him to bring this book, which I just quoted from. He said, he opened up the first page. He read to him just the first line, and he closed the book. He said, that's all you need to know. That's the essence of Kabbalah. Right? In the end, the son became a great Kabbalist himself, but the point was the father made the point. Right? That's it. That's the essence of Kabbalah, that line just now we just read. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's look on. Now we're going to look on to the next quote from the Arizal. Okay?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, Elias. Would you reread that one line now that you said that?
No problem. Read it again. Okay, read it again. Kesha'ala b'ritzono itbarach shemo. When it rose up in God's will, may he be blessed, to create the world. Now, this is in order to do good to his creation, to bestow. Lehetiv means to bestow goodness upon his creation. V'yakiru gudloso, and to recognize his greatness. V'yizku liot mirkava. And that they should merit a vessel, literally a chariot, literally something that Merkava means like a throne is the best word. Right? It's not the right word. The word is not key, but like the throne for his supernal being, and to cling to him. And then the passage goes on and explains all these other things that God did to achieve that. But that's why he created the world. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Now we're going to the next source, okay? Duh. Are you with us, Sarah?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, fine. Okay. Duh. And I said to you, Sefer Otzrot Chaim. Duh. Ki tchilat hakol haya. This is very, very famous. Very, very, very famous. Right? And we discussed this in class. And I'm sure Leia knows this, even though you weren't in my class. Duh. Ki tchilat hakol haya. Kol emitziyut or pashut an nikra ein sof. That before the creation, nothing existed but a soul light, right, called the Ein Sof, the infinite. Loya shum halal v'shum avir panui. And this we learned in class, right? There was no empty space at all, right, for the world to exist. El kol haya or Ein Sof. Rather, everything was this light of the infinite. This we saw in class, right? Now here's a point. Kasher alab ritzono. When it came to God's mind, Hatzil and Salim, the Sibat know that in order to emanate a creation, why did he emanate a creation? Here's the point. V'hi likra rachum v'chanun, erech apayim, in order that he should be called compassionate and gracious and long-suffering. God, in other words, God created the world in order that we should recognize him as good and compassionate and gracious. Kim ein ba'olam, listen to this. Ki ein ba'olam mi shikabel rachamim mimenu. That there's no one in this world to receive his compassion